Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
So tonight is December 14th, and we are in Sefer Ezra. We are starting the sixth chapter, Parak Vav. And this is the response that Daryavish has to the letter that was sent to him. Remember that they started to engage in the building of the second Beis HaMikdash without permission from the king. And the non-Jews living in the area stormed over and demanded, who gave you permission to do this? What are your names? And they didn't back down. They said that we're willing to send a letter to the king, to Daryavish, and let's find out what he says. And the letter stated, we're up to Perek Vav. Six. What's that? Yeah. And the letter stated that Daryavish should look in the history books to see that they had permission from Koresh to begin rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, and it was stopped. And that they would like to continue rebuilding it. So now Daryavish receives the letter, and we now see what he does. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Beidayin, then, Daryavish Malka, sometime, Daryavish the king gave instructions, Uvakaru Beveis Sifraya, and they checked in the chronicles, the history books, the Ginzaya Mehachasin Tama Bevavel, that were lying in the storehouses, the archives, thank you, in Bavel. Vehishtechach Beachmesa Bevirsa, and they found in a container. Rashi says that this is a container that was used to hold the documents. They would have containers that would keep the documents from the elements. Bevirsa Diva Madai Medinta, that was in the palace in Madai, the country. Megillah Chada, one scroll. The Cheng Ksiv Begava, and this is what was written in it. Dichrona, as a remembrance, meaning history. Now they only found one document that was going to substantiate the claim of the Jews that they had permission 18 years earlier. Achashverosh, when he wanted to make sure this would never happen, that there would be no rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, Achashverosh took care to make sure there was no record of there having been permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And this should conjure up in your mind a similar miracle, which will take place in a little over 100 years later, which we're about to celebrate. Where there was none, and they found the one flask. There was an attempt to eradicate all of the documents, all of the oil, and one is found. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be found, that it should be known that they did in fact have permission. And the document read as follows. Bishnaschad al-Koresh Malka, in the first year of Koresh the king, Koresh Malka, some to aim, Koresh Malka had given permission, base elokav Yerushalem, Baisa Yisbenei, the house of God in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem, the house should be built. Asar di Davchin Divchin, the place where sacrifices are sacrificed. Ve Ushohi Mesovlin, and the walls should be established. Rumei Amin Shitin, its height should be 60 amos high. Pisaye Amin Shitin, and its width would be 60 amos as well. Nidbachin di Eben Gelal Tulasa, rows of stone, three. In other words, it should be built as follows. Three rows of stone, followed by Vinidbach di Achadas, and then a row of new wood. And that's the way it would go. It would go three and one, three and one, three and one. That's the way they would build the height of the building. Three layers of stone, one layer of wood. I am not at all a carpenter or a mason or have any understanding of how these things work, but apparently that is a solid way to build. Vinifikasamin base malka tis yehiv. And, very significantly, the expenditures the overhead should come from the king. From the house of the king it should be given. So that Koresh had said he would not only permit the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash but also fund it. Va'af mani beis elaka, and also the utensils of the house of God, the dahava v'chaspa that were made of gold and silver, the Nebuchadnezzar hanpeik min hechla di v'yushlem, that Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the sanctuary in Yerushalayim, v'hevel levavel, and brought them to Babel, yahasivun, they should be returned, v'hach lehechla di v'yushlem la'asrei, and brought to the sanctuary in Yerushalayim to its place, and they should remain in the house of God. So the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash should also be returned. As we know, they were returned, but then apparently they were then taken back, because when Achashverosh made his party, he used the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash. So this is what the letter stated, that that Koresh had found, that Dayavish had found. And he's writing a letter in turn to the non-Jewish governors of Israel. Ka'an, now, Tatnai Pachas Aver Nahara, Tatnai, who is the governor of the area on the other side of the river, Shesar Boznai Uchnabason, and also these are the names of the people, Shesar Boznai and those who are with them, their entourage, Afarsechaye di ba'aver nahara, the various I guess governors or different types of government posts on the other side of the river. Rachikin havo min tama. You should distance yourselves from there. So his first instruction to them is, remain away from the Jews who are trying to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Give them their space. You stay away from them. Shivuku la'avidas Beis Elaka deich. Leave alone the work of this building of the house of God. Pachas Yehudaye, the leader of the Jews, that would be Zerubbabel, Ulesave Yehudaye, and to the elders of the Jews, Beis Elaka deich, this house of God, Yivnun al-Asrei, should be built on its place. So he's giving instructions that the non-Jews should leave the Jews alone, and he's giving instructions to the leadership of the Jewish people to build the Beis HaMikdash. Umini sim te'em, and for me, I give instructions. Lamadi sa'avdun im save Yehudaye ileich, to that which is being done with the elders of these Jews, l'mivnei beis elaka deich, to build this house of God, u'minichsei malka, and from the treasury of the king, dimidas avar nahara, that comes in from the taxes on the other side of the river, meaning the taxes that are collected on your side of the river that are supposed to come to me, to Dayavesh, Asperna nifkisa tehave misihava liguvaya ileich, that it should be spent, it should be given to these men, dilalavatala, in order that the building not be derailed, not be stopped. So he's giving instructions. This is like a slap in the face to the non-Jewish governors in the land of Israel, because he's giving instructions that they should stay away, that the building should be built, and that it should be funded by the king, by Dayavish. But which funds is he allocating? He's taking the tax money that would have been spent by the non-Jewish governors on that side of the river and saying, that's the money that's going to go to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Uma Hashchan, and that which they are concerned about, meaning the following that they are concerned about, should also be done. Uvnei Sorin, V'dichrin, V'imrin, and birds, and that's doves, those are goats and sheep, la'alavan, to be brought as karbanos, as sacrifices, as an ola, la'elaka shmaya, for the God of heaven, meaning that there should also be animals provided. Not only do I want to provide money to build the building, I want to provide money to, I want to provide animals to be used as sacrifices. Chintin melach chamar umeshach. I forget what the word chintin means. One moment, please. Yeah, chintin is flour, F-L-O-U-R, and salt, and wine, and oil. All those are necessary commodities for running a Beis HaMikdash. Kimeimar kohanaya divyushlem lehevei misyehev lahom. According to the word of the Kohanim, who are in Yerushalayim, it should be given to them. Sugazunt. Yom biyom, every day. Dila shalu, that they should not, without being pushed away, without being stopped. It should be done. Dila havon mehakrivin nichochin le'alaka shmaya, so they should be able to offer sacrifices to the God of the heavens. Umitzalayin lechaye malka uvenohi, and they should pray for the life of the king and for his children. So Dayavesh is saying, let this all be done, and I want this to be done, and I want everything to be taken care of, including the funding, including not only the funding of the building, but the funding of the sacrifices, and that way they can run their Beis HaMikdash, and they can pray for my life and the life of my children.
Excuse me. Didn't he just say that it was in Koresh's hand?
No, he was quoting the letter he had seen from Koresh, and now he's giving instructions.
Oh, I see.
Now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two things. One is this verse that is he nearing the end of his life? Who came at that time? At that point, is he?
Well, he doesn't
older
know.
And
no, he's young.
He's still young.
Yeah, he's young.
Okay. And the other thing is that they mentioned the height and the
width,
but nothing about the length. It's
right.
3 cubits, and so. What are we to assume? That it's square?
Yeah, no, I don't know how. I don't know what it was.
Because
I don't know
it's
what it
like
was.
A box.
Right. The actual measurements were a little different than this. That was the instructions that Koresh had given 18 years earlier that was then stopped. When it was actually built, it was higher than that. It was actually 100 amos high.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. It was 100 amos high, and I don't remember now the width and length of the Beis HaMikdash. I believe it was 70 amos long, and I can't remember the width. I think that's what it was. So we know the dimensions of the second Beis HaMikdash from the Mishnayos. The Mishnayos describe it because they were there. The sages of the Mishnah, some of them lived before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, and they could tell us what the dimensions were. The only thing is, it was renovated at a certain point, which we're actually going to discuss next week. In my Hanukkah class next week, we'll discuss that renovation under Hordus, under Herod, it was renovated. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that affected any of the dimensions. But the dimensions that are described in the Mishnah do not follow the dimensions mentioned over here. But I don't know that they were bound by them, because that was 18 years earlier from Koresh. This is a new command by Daryavesh to build the second Beis HaMikdash, and I don't know that he limited the size.
Is there any indication about the inside area?
Yeah, it's all there in the Mishnah. I don't remember now all the details. The walls were very thick. So the inside area was much smaller than the total area, because the walls were several amos thick. Now, we're not up to the best part yet. This is like, you know, right in the slap in the face to all those, to the ones who wanted to stop the building, but we have even more to go. So he says, Yod Aleph 11, Uminisim Te'em, and from me I give instructions. Dichol Enosh Di Yehashnei Piskama Dina, any man who shall go against this commandment. So what's going to happen? What's going to be the punishment if you dare to stop the building of the second Beis HaMikdash? Yisnesach amin bayseh, lumber will be taken from his house. Uzekef yismechei alohi, and he will be hung from that gallows. Uvayseh nivalu yisaved, and his house will be made waste. Al dina, because of this. So if anybody tries to stop them, we're going to take a piece of wood from their house, a large beam We'll break down their house, take the largest beam in their house we can find. We will stand it upright, and we will hang him from that beam. What does this remind you of?
Haman.
Haman, the gallows that he built was for Mordechai, was a beam that was used in the teva, in the ark of Noach, that had been built into his home. Haman had built this beam that he had gotten from the, I don't know how he got it. I mean, it says that his son had procured it for him. How he got it, I don't know. And it was built into Haman's home. And he, Haman, wanted so badly to have a 50 amma high gallows. Where do you find a piece of wood that's that tall? That's a huge, that's a very, very tall gallows. So he broke down his home. He took that huge beam out of his home and stood it up for Mordechai. And then Haman was hung from it. Remember that not only was Haman hung from the gallows, but who else was hung from the gallows?
Yeah.
Haman's 10 sons were hung from the gallows. Who was one of the leaders of the non-Jews 18 years earlier who stopped the building of the Beis HaMikdash? Was Shimshai, who was Haman's son. Not necessarily one of the ones who got hung, but he was one of Haman's sons. They were fully aware. This comes on the heels of the Purim story. The Purim story happened not too many years earlier. Everybody knew what had happened. And Shimshai is no longer there because he's dead. And Shimshai's father was hung on a gallows using a beam that was broken out of Haman's house. So Daryavish, who knows the story full well and knows that people know the story, threatens them with the same fate. Just as Haman and his sons were hung from a gallows on a beam that was taken out of Haman's own house, which is like, you know, in your face, so too over here, if you try to stop the Jews, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to take a beam out of your house, we're going to hang you from it, and we're going to destroy your house. Yud Beis 12. Ve'laka di shakin shmei tama, and the God who rests his name there, yemagar komelech va'am, he should destroy all kings and nations, di yishlach yedei, that would send their hand, lahashnaya lechabala beis elaka deich di Yerushalayim, that wants to destroy this house in Yerushalayim. So he's not only saying if anybody tries to stop the building, they're going to get hurt, they're going to get killed, but if afterwards, later on in history, a nation comes to attack the Jews and destroy the Beis HaMikdash, as we know happened, that nation should be destroyed by the God of the heavens. Here, Daryavish is uttering a curse against anyone who should come to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So he is essentially cursing the nation of Edom, who later does destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Ana Daryavish Samas to aim, I, Daryavish, have given instructions. Asparna yisaved, it shall be carried out quickly, in haste. That's the letter that he sent back to the non-Jewish governor of Israel at that time. Edayin then, Tatnai Pachas Avar Nahara, Tatnai, the governor of the other side of the river. Shesar Boznai Uchonavason, Shesar Boznai and their entourage, Lakavel Dishlach Daryavish Malka Kinema, when they saw what Daryavish the king had sent, Asparna Avaru, they did it with haste. The Sabe Yehudaye and the elders of the Jews, Banayin Umatzlechin, they were building and they were successful. As we mentioned last time, some building projects can go smoothly, sometimes they hit many, many pitfalls. Here it went very smoothly. Binvuas Chagai Neviav uZechariah Bar Ido, with the prophecies of Chagai the Navi and Zechariah Bar Ido. We mentioned last time those two prophets prophesied at the same time as this was going on. Uveno, and they built Veshachlilu, and they established Minitam Eloka Yisrael, because of, now the second Beis HaMikdash is now being blamed on, because of the intervention of the God of Yisrael. That's number one. He gets credit, of course, Hashem. Umiteim Koresh v'Daryavesh v'Artachshasta Melech Paras. And also because of Koresh, 18 years earlier, and Daryavesh, who is Artachshasta, that's the same person, the king of Paras. So here, in the end, who is getting credit for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, is getting credit. And also, Koresh, from 18 years ago, and Daryavesh, who is Artaxasta, the king of Persia. The fact that Koresh is being given any kind of credit here is surprising. Because yes, Koresh authorized the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, but then Koresh was convinced to stop it. And he did stop it. And we pointed out last time that Koresh lost his chance to be the one who would be responsible for the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. Nevertheless, he does get an honorable mention here. The fact of the matter is that the way that it came about is that Daryavesh searched and discovered the original letter from Koresh permitting or authorizing the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So in the end, Koresh posthumously does play a role in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So as much as Koresh reneged and therefore lost the chance to be the one responsible for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, but he does not lose the credit completely. He does have some credit, and it was his impetus that started it off, and it was his letter that was the final trigger to get it moving again. So he does get mentioned, and of course Daryavesh gets mentioned because he's the one who finally authorized it. Vishetzi Vaisadina, and this building was completed. Ad Yom Tlasa Lirach Adar, on the third day of Adar, Dihishnas Shes, which is the sixth year, Lamalkos Daryavesh Malka, to the kingdom of Daryavesh the king. It was begun in the second year of Daryavesh. It took 4 years to build. And on the third of Adar, in the sixth year, the Beis HaMikdash was completed. And Vavadu v'nei Yisrael, and the Jews did Kohanaya v'levaye, the Kohanim and the Levim, Ushar b'nei Galusa, and the rest of those who had been in Galus in exile, Chanukah space Elaka dina, the Chanukah of this building, of this house of God, b'chedva, with joy. They made a Chanukah, a Chanukah Habayis. They made a, we'll define that presently what that is, with joy. And what did they do for this Chanukah Habayis, for this inauguration? V'hakrivu l'chanukah space elaka dina, they brought in honor of this Chanukah, of this inauguration, of this house of God, Torin mi'ah, 100 Torin. Torin are what's it called?
Turtle
dove? No. I made a mistake before. I was going to go back. Are bulls? That's right. Before, when I said that Bnei Torin was doves, it's not true. It's bulls. That's what it is. Calves or bulls?
Wow.
Yeah. So 100 bulls. Dichrin Masayin, 200.
Rams,
right? Thank you. I said before, again, I got that wrong before also. I said before it was goats. It's rams, an adult sheep. That's what it is. Imrin arba ma'ah, 400 sheep. That's younger sheep. Utsfire izin, there's your goats. Lechatoya, and goats as a karban chatas, as a sin offering. Al kol Yisrael, for all the Jews. Tre asar, 12 sin offerings. Leminyan shivte Yisrael, for the equal to the count of the tribes of Israel. One per tribe, a sin offering as well. So most of the offerings were not sin offerings, they were thanksgiving offerings. And then there were also 12 sin offerings to atone for each of the tribes. Yes?
Goats are not kosher. Correct?
No, goats are kosher.
Goats are kosher.
They are kosher?
Sacrifices can only be...
Oh, I thought they were not kosher.
Yeah. Sacrifices can only be brought from kosher animals.
Well, I know that, but I thought the goat meat was not...
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing. I'll tell you, we'll digress just for a moment about goat meat in the United States. It's a fascinating thing. I know this is a digression, but it's a fascinating digression. The way it works in the United States in a slaughterhouse, in a schlachthaus, is that they slaughter the animal, and then they check it to make sure that it's kosher. Because even if it's slaughtered properly, well, first of all, they have to make sure the slaughtering was done properly, number one. Number two, if the slaughtering was done properly, they have to do an internal check to make sure there's no hole in the lung or some kind of other defect that would render the animal not kosher. So they have to check it all. Now, an animal that is discovered to be not kosher, so then what happens to it? It's a significant, animals cost a lot of money. If it's not kosher, you can't sell it to Jews. It's a significant loss of money. So they have a running arrangement with a non-kosher meatpacking house. All kosher slaughterhouses in the United States have some sort of a running, an ongoing arrangement with a non-kosher dealer that all the animals that are either slaughtered improperly or discovered to be trefa, that have some sort of a defect, are then sold to the non-kosher slaughterhouse, non-kosher meatpacking establishment. And that way there's no loss of money. That's the arrangement. So that works well for cows, and it works well for sheep. It even works well for chickens. It does not work for goats. The reason it doesn't work for goats, believe it or not, is because in order to do an internal check, I'm sorry if this makes anybody queasy, in order to do an internal check, so you know that, of course, the way we slaughter animals at the neck, and after the animal has been slaughtered and the blood is drained and everything, then the way to do an internal check is that a slit is made along the underside of the animal. In order to reach inside, you have to check the lungs. So you have to open up the chest cavity to get to the lungs. The market for goats in the United States is whole goats. If you would cut the chest cavity of the goat, you would make it impossible to sell to a non-kosher establishment. So that you're taking a risk, because if you cut that incision and then reach inside and check the lung and discover a problem, you will not be able to sell that goat and you'll lose the money. And therefore, there is no kosher goat meat industry in the United States. I discovered this when I took my first trip to a slaughterhouse when I was getting trained, and you know, in all of the rabbinic things I was doing in Baltimore, and I went there and I saw that they were slaughtering calves and large cows and sheep, and then there was one goat on the assembly line, and the one goat on the assembly line they did not slaughter in a kosher way. All they did was one of the non-Jews came and
killed it.
And they left it. They didn't check it. They didn't. They just, you know, they drained the blood, and then they were going to sell it. So I said, "Why didn't she?" You know, and that's what they said. I never knew that. So that's why you can't get goat. So people assume that goat meat might not be kosher, but it's not because there is no way to do it in the United States in a financially successful manner.
But I thought the other reason was that they will eat just about anything. I mean, they will eat garbage.
Well, really, all the animals that graze will eat anything that's there.
Really?
Yeah.
Cows?
Yeah, cows will eat anything that's there. In fact,
I've seen cows eat a lot of garbage in India.
Yeah, in fact,
big grease on garbage.
So
anyway, sorry.
What they do for cows, because of the problem that cows will eat anything, and they can eat nails, they can eat all kinds of stuff, it gets into their stomachs, and then if it punctures the stomach, it makes the animal not kosher.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do to prevent that, this is an amazing thing, they have the animal swallow a magnet, and it sits in the first stomach of the cow, which is a large stomach, and it catches, it's supposed to catch all the metal that it eats, and it prevents it from going into the smaller stomachs and intestines and puncture them. It's an amazing thing.
Who knew?
So you knew this.
Yeah.
I'm glad I asked.
You know, the interesting thing to me about this is that I can see that there might be a market for whole kid goats, but a whole adult goat.
I don't know. I don't know. This is what they maybe it was only the kid. I don't know. This is what they told me at the slaughterhouse.
So, like in Israel, they do have.
Well, in Israel, I'm not sure how they handle it. I'm not sure how they handle the entire issue of non-kosher meat. You know, that's a whole.
I think there's a lot of goat eating going on.
Now the goats are on the altar.
The goats are on the altar. Yeah. Cows,
okay,
goats,
so now,
sheep.
Given the story that you told.
Yeah.
What's going to happen when they're prepared for sacrifice? Are they going to be slit down? And
Yeah. They check everything, and if it's no good, they have to do another animal. Yeah. They check the animal.
Okay.
Yeah.
This could go pretty far, you know?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
So I have two questions. The first is why Dari had to find some documents related to the Beis Hamikdash, so he could make his own decree, right? So, And the second is what happened to Esther after the Purim story. We didn't hear anything about
her yet. Right. We don't hear anything about her. And as I mentioned in the past, Daryavish was not raised as a Jew. He was raised as a non-Jew. He was raised
she,
in the...
She was in the like his mother's...
Yeah, but Daryavish was not going to authorize the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash without some sort of reason to do so. It was not on his agenda. However, when the Jews told him, look for the document, and he did look for the document and discovered it, that was his impetus to do it. Now, it's likely that he wanted to find an excuse to do it. Right, it's likely he was looking for the reason, but it wasn't going to happen without some sort of a push of something. Esther, her influence over him would have been very limited, even though she was the queen. But she was the queen. But as we saw from the story of Esther, the queen was very limited in her power. She had some influence over her husband, but the power was all in Ahasuerus' hands. And when he died, it passed to Daryavish.
And now, did she move to
Eretz Yisrael? No. Her burial place, I believe, is in Persia.
I went to, seminary, and there were some Iranian girls there. They said they used to visit the tombs
of Mordechai
and Esther.
Yeah.
Is this whole book written in Aramaic?
No, we're actually going to be switching back shortly.
Why is the section in Aramaic?
Yeah, I'm not sure why this particular section is.
I don't know where the letters would be, but why the regular...
I'm not sure. And Daniel, we spoke about it a little bit. There was a little easier to know. Here, I'm not sure why. What the reason is for switching back from Hebrew. It started in Hebrew, no. Switched to Aramaic. I'm not sure why. I'm sorry, Dr. Clary had her hand up.
Well, I was wondering, I don't remember clearly Daryavish. I don't remember his personality or his temperament. I remember now that he was one of the children of Esther. So what kind of king was he?
We don't know. I mean, this is all we know so far.
So, and this is when he's...
He's young.
Young? So yeah. So prior to that, we don't know if he was nice to the Jewish people or...
He authorized this in the second year of his reign. So he wasn't king for that long, and then it took 4 years to build.
Uh-huh. Was he king for a while or a very short
time? It wasn't that long.
Uh-huh. So do we have a history of him being...
We don't have a history of him being negative to the Jews. That we don't have. As it seems that...
But this is a very positive...
Yes, yeah. This is very positive. Eventually, the Persians are going to be... defeated by the Greeks and under Alexander, and they're going to take over. And then we have to deal with a whole new set of governors and figure out how to handle that, which eventually will lead to the Hanukkah story. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is Hashem letting that Koresh end up getting credit after all he did?
Because Koresh did, at one point, with good intentions, authorize the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So even though he reneged, but he did do something positive, and it's not ignored.
So even when Daryavish does it, it's only in Koresh's credit.
Right. I mean, it's Daryavish's credit and Koresh's credit, but Koresh is not totally ignored. It does come.
I wanted to have it that it's Hashem and not.
Well, that's why the number one name here is Hashem, where
we still have the and.
Yeah, that's true. But originally, it was Koresh himself. Koresh just said, "Hashem has authorized me to. He's given me the control of the whole world, and he wants me to rebuild the Beis." That was Koresh's declaration in the beginning of the book.
Where it says many questions. In verse 14, where it said Hashem and Koresh and so on, in my English translation, it said, and Artaxerxes.
Yeah.
And then I just looked in this book, mm-hmm. and it also says, and, so...
It lists Daryavish and the other name.
So are we sure that...
Well, there is a dispute over whether it's the same person or not. Both Rashi and... Mitzudas David understand that it's the same person. That's why I used this. I meant to say that there's a difference of opinion there.
Okay.
But what's very confusing is Daryavish really had two other names, Artaxasta and Koresh. So it's very confusing who we're talking about. But that's the way Rashi and the Mitzudas understands it.
So some of them might have been titles.
That's what Rashi says. Well. Rashi's Artaxasta was the title, like Paro. That's what he says.
Ahasuerus was not Artaxerxes.
Ahasuerus at one time is called Artaxasta as
yeah.
well. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, he also gets, because that's the title, like it was
yeah,
just mentioned.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, one more question. We've got to move on. Go ahead.
I was just thinking that here, all these circumstances, like Esther becomes a queen, and then her son gives permission to build the Beit HaMikdash.
Mm-hmm.
Yosef becomes the viceroy. If you don't look at that.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you can't understand.
There is a God.
Seeing that God's hand is.
That's right.
I mean, we're such a little people. Where do we get the, we're going to be the viceroy or the queen, the Queen Esther? It's like miraculous.
You're right.
You don't see that. It's like, and the people, the rest of the people, they don't see that. Like, we're such a tiny people.
No argument.
Right? Yeah, it's amazing.
I want to read the last five verses of the chapter, and then I want to discuss Chanukah Sabai, since that's really what's relevant to Chanukah. So Yurchas 18, Vahakimu Kahanaya Biflugas Hain, and the Kohanim got set up in their divisions. The Kohanim have 24 divisions of Kohanim that they alternate weeks. Each they work, it's a 24-week cycle. What's that?
Rotations,
thank you, right? So they got established in their divisions. For Levoye Bimachle Kashon, and the Levim also in their divisions. Al Avidas Alaka Div Yushlaim, about the work of Hashem in Yushlaim. Kirsam Sfar Moshe, like it's written in the book of Moshe, meaning in the Torah. Vayasu Vene Hagola Es HaPasach. Now remember, this was on the 3rd of Adar that the Beis HaMikdash was not fully functional. So after that, you have Purim. But Purim is not a biblical holiday, so it doesn't have any specific action in the Beis HaMikdash. But the next biblical holiday is Pesach. So the people of the exile, who are now back in Israel, made the Pesach. On the 14th day of the first month of Nisan. Here, Pesach doesn't mean the holiday, it means the sacrifice. The Pesach sacrifice is brought on the 14th, which is Erev Pesach, the day before Pesach, and that night the meat is eaten at the Seder as the Afikoman, where we eat matzah in place of the meat, they ate the meat of this sacrifice.
And this would have been the first time in a long time.
That's right. First time in many years. Kihi toharu ha-kohanim v'ha-levim ke'echad kulam tohurim. For the Kohanim and the Levim had become pure, meaning pure enough to be able to work in the Beis HaMikdash. Everybody pure together. Vayishchatu ha-pesach v'chol b'nei ha-golo. They sacrificed the carbon Pesach, the sacrifice of the Pesach for all those who had been in exile. V'lachayhem ha-kohanim v'lahem. And for their brothers, the Kohanim, and for themselves. And the ones who were involved with it did it for everybody. Vayelchul b'nei Yisrael ha-shavim mei ha-golo. And the Jews who returned from the exile, they ate. V'chol ha-nivdol mitumas goyei ha-aretz aleihem. And all those who had separated from the impurities of the nations around them. Lidrosh la-Hashem Elokei Yisrael, to seek out Hashem, the God of Israel. Vayasu chag matzos shivas yomim b'simcha. Then they made the holiday of Pesach, the Chag HaMatzos, 7 days with joy. Ki simcham Hashem, for Hashem had made them joyful. That He saved Leif Melech Ashur Aleihem, and had turned the king of Ashur towards them. We have to comment about that. What do you mean the king of Ashur? We're talking about the king of Persia.
Mm-hmm.
But he turned the king, the heart of the king towards them. L'chazek yedeihem, to strengthen their hands. B'mlechas beso Elokim, Elokei Yisrael, with the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. The commentaries here say the reason why it says the king of Ashur, the Persian king, Dariavish, was in control of the entire world, entire known world, including Ashur, Assyria. So why mention the king of Ashur? I mean, he was the king of everything. You could call him the king of Egypt. You can call him the king of Persia. You can call him the king of Israel. Call him the king of whatever you want. Why call him the king of Ashur, the king of Assyria? Because since Sanherib, the king of Ashur, was the one who had taken the 10 tribes into exile, so what the Navi is trying to draw our attention to is that Dariavish was now the king also over Ashur, and even from Ashur, the heart of the king was turned towards the Jewish people. It's a reversal, where the king of Ashur had been so terrible to the Jews, now the person who was in charge of Ashur, who was Dariavish, his heart is towards the Jews, is helping the Jews. So we're emphasizing the complete turnaround from where the nation, the king of that nation had been so terrible to us and now is good to us. Yes?
You said before that you could bring Karbanos with Omi Mizbeach. So why didn't they have Pesach and Tonis?
Okay, so remember that the work was stopped. So they started bringing Karbanos when they started the work back then, 18 years earlier. Remember we said we didn't know when it stopped. It was off and on. It was kind of like petering out. So I don't know exactly when it stopped, and I don't know what if there was a Pesach that they were still offering sacrifices during that time. However, even if there was a Mizbeach, it's not necessarily the case that they were able to do the Pesach properly, because they didn't have the Beis HaMikdash, and they weren't pure yet. They weren't Tahar. Now, the fact of the matter is that there is a rule called the Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur, which is that if the majority of the congregation is Tamei, is impure, and I'm talking here specifically about the impurity of mace, of coming into contact with a dead body, if the majority of the nation is impure, then there's a dispensation where it is permitted to offer a sacrifice, a communal sacrifice, despite the fact that we're impure, including Pesach. There is such a dispensation. However, that only applies to the impurity of mace, of coming in contact with a dead body. Other types of impurities, that rule does not apply. So I don't know what the status of everybody was, whether they had enough functioning kohanim at the time. There may have been other impediments. Whatever it is, even if they did offer the Pesach at that time, it was not on the level of this one. It wasn't on the scale of this one, and it wasn't with everybody being Tahar, being pure.
Would it be on Pesach Sheni?
Well, that's also a discussion of when Pesach Sheni is an acceptable alternative. And it's a very involved discussion of how that works.
Also, were people all regular? I'm saying, were people from Bavel who hadn't come up with Chachila, did they come up now?
It doesn't say it. It doesn't say it. I don't know the answer. It's a good question. I don't know. Yeah?
Did they have a red cow?
Well, they did. Red heifer. Yeah, that's how they became pure.
Oh, so they used that.
Yeah, that is what the Navi means to say. That's exactly what he's trying to say. That they were able to purify everybody because they were able, they did find a red heifer, they were able to perform that mitzvah properly, and everybody became pure. That's right.
Paraduma.
What's that?
Paraduma.
Yeah, paraduma. Okay, now, the Chanukas HaBayis, which is emphasized back in Sukkim Tezayin and Yudzayin, that's 16 and 17, that they made a Chanukah Sabayis. Now, we celebrate Chanukah. The Chanukah we celebrate is called Chanukah HaMizbeach, not Chanukah Sabayis. Bayis means, of course, the building, the house. Mizbeach means the altar. Chanukah means to initiate. Chanukah means to initiate. When you say inaugurate, I don't know what the literal translation of inaugurate is. I'm not sure if it's the same as initiate. Meaning, a Chanukah means to begin working, to begin acting in that position. The Chanukas HaBayis, the inauguration, the initiation of the house of the Beis HaMikdash, means to use the Beis HaMikdash for the first time. That is the Chanukas HaBayis. The Chanukas HaMizbeach, same thing. It's to initiate the altar, to use the altar for the first time. Chanukah is called Chanukah because the work in the Beis HaMikdash had been stopped because of the Syrian Greeks, and worse, because of the Jews who were Hellenists. And they undermined the work in the Beis HaMikdash, and it had been stopped. It had become impure. The place was in shambles. And when the Hashmonaim, when the Maccabees came and defeated the Greeks and the Hellenists, then they reestablished the service in the Beis HaMikdash, and they reestablished the sacrifices on the Mizbeach, on the altar. And that's Chanukas HaMizbeach. They initiated it, they began to use it. The celebration that is mentioned over here people like to do what they call a Chanukah Habayis, which is a recognition to a thanksgiving to Hashem. When a person buys a new home, there are many people who like to do a Chanukah Habayis. It is not a requirement to do, and many people do not do it, but a lot of people like to do something like that. A Chanukah Habayis is some sort of a marking the occasion of having moved into a new home. Many institutions, when they build a new building, will make a Chanukah Habayis, so they'll initiate it with some sort of occasion to mark the new building. It's important to note that Chanukah does not mean Thanksgiving. And Chanukah does not mean mark the occasion. Chanukah means to initiate, to use it, which means that if you want to make a Chanukah HaMizbeach, a Chanukah of the altar, you have to offer a sacrifice on the altar. That is the Chanukah of the altar. If you want to make a Chanukah HaBayis of the Beis HaMikdash, then you have to begin service in the Beis HaMikdash, which includes sacrifices and everything else that goes on in the Beis HaMikdash. If you're going to make a Chanukah of a shul, a Chanukah Habayis of a new shul, the way to do it is to daven there. Hold a davening that marks the occasion of the building of the shul, of the shul building. Just to get together and have a speech is not really a Chanukah Habayis. A Chanukah means to initiate. So you would have an actual formal davening which marks the new building. If you build a new base medrash to study Torah in, then the way to do that is to have the study of Torah go on over there, which could be done individually or through a class, but you would do it with the study of Torah. That would initiate the hall of study, the base medrash. So that's what a Chanukah is. So when people make a Chanukah Habayis for a new home that they moved into, really, living in the home is the Chanukah Habayis. Which means as soon as the family moves in, and as soon as the children spill apple juice all over the floor, right? That is Chanukah Habayis. They've now initiated the use of the house, right? That's what it is. So when people make a Chanukah Habayis, what I tell them is that what they might want to do, again, not everybody does this. I personally did not make a Chanukah Habayis when we moved into our home, but those who do it, I tell them that what you might want to do is you might want to mark the occasion of having over guests, for example. That would be because you want to use your home for mitzvah. So one form of using a home as a mitzvah is to bring people into the home. So you mark the occasion by inviting over guests and having something to mark the occasion. That would be a use of the home that is a Chanukah Habayis. But again, to cut a ribbon is not a Chanukah Habayis. That's a way of marking an occasion. But it's not a Chanukah Habayis. A Chanukah Habayis is to use the thing that you are initiating in the way that it's meant to be used. Yes?
Well, I think an inauguration would be putting something in place, affirming an affirmation that the initiation could go forward.
Okay.
That,
so it's like a step before the initiation.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like there has to be the inauguration.
Right. The inauguration is the official thing. Okay, now we're going to go forward.
Yeah. The stamp of approval.
Right.
Recognition and all of that. That's well.
Right. Right. So a ribbon cutting would be like that. That would be a similar idea. Yeah.
Well, when you bring salt and bread into a house, when you move into a new home or a place or apartment, is that sort of like that?
I'm not familiar with the practice.
Well, we always brought salt and bread into the house.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe that's just to show that it should be a house of blessing, you know, where there's food. You know, perhaps that's what it is.
Well, maybe it kind of comes from that, though.
Could be. I don't know.
We should do a challah.
What about a renovation? A major renovation?
Okay, so a major renovation would also there would be reason to initiate as well, because when you have a major renovation, what you've done is you've created a new space. So if it really is something new, then it warrants some sort of recognition. So again, it's not a requirement. I don't want to make anybody think that you have to do something like this, but and generally institutions do it. Private people don't always do it, and it's not required. But if one is going to do it, there would be room to do it with a renovation as well. I just want to make the point, we'll get to your question tomorrow, I just want to make the point that with Hanukkah, when we celebrate Hanukkah, Mirtz Hashem next week, when we begin celebrating Hanukkah, so the word Hanukkah means to initiate. Mm-hmm. It comes from the word chinuch, mm-hmm. which means to initiate. So that when we are lighting those candles and we are commemorating what happened in the past, it's meant to be an initiation for us. It's not meant to be simply remembering. Like all of our holidays are not only meant to be remembered, they're meant to actually teach us something for now. But whatever we're doing over the 8 days of Hanukkah, and the growth that we're experiencing is meant to initiate for us a new appreciation or a new way of serving Hashem, which we do through the lighting of the candles, but it's not meant to end after 8 days. Even though we stop lighting the candles after 8 days, and we stop saying Hallel after 8 days, and we stop eating Sufganiyot after 8 days, but it's meant to be, even the name of the holiday is Hanukkah. It's meant to initiate so that when you get to the next month, and the next month, and the next month, you're constantly drawing from the Hanukkah that you went through. It's initiating us in a new approach or a more dedicated approach to serving Hashem throughout the winter months. That's the idea of Hanukkah, of initiating the holiday.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.